AM 570 KLAC, 98.7 KYSR, HD2.
Los Angeles.
Available anywhere using the iHeartRadio app. AM 570, an LA sports icon.
Fred Rogan is here tonight.
Decades on your television covering Los Angeles sports.
Fred Rogan, huge in Los Angeles.
The Dean.
I'm the Dean.
Fred Rogan.
Weekdays before Petros and Money.
A USC All-American.
USC's Rodney Peet.
An NFL quarterback.
Absolutely perfectly delivered by Rodney
Peet.
Available on the iHeartRadio app or on AM570LASports.com.
This is Rogan and Rodney.
We continue on. Fred Rogan, Rob Parker, and today for Rodney on AM 570 LA Sports. We still have to give away the Burke Williams gift card. We thank Kenny for playing Know Your Squad. Didn't really understand the concept initially that you have to speak to win. But I think he's got it now, and if he calls back to play another day, I'm sure he's going to nail it. But that means you have a chance to win Burke Williams. And we'll do that between now and 3 o'clock. Also, a reminder, download the free iHeartRadio app. Take the show wherever you go. You stream the show live. We have more people listening on the app now than ever before.
Is that right?
Yeah, our streaming numbers are way, way up.
That's awesome.
And another thing that's up are the podcast numbers. And what does that mean? That means if you missed the show but you have the app, you can go back and listen to any part of the show you want.
And you guys got video now, too, which is good, right?
We got some video. I would suggest this. If you didn't hear Hour 1 today, go back when you get a chance and just listen to the first segment. If you don't listen to anything else, listen to the first segment, the conversation we had about LeBron and our callers that became part of the conversation as well. At the very least, it'll cause you to think.
That's it. It's a conversation. It wasn't anything else, and we need to have conversations in this country.
Okay. Now, joining us from NBA.com and NBA TV, our friend Mark Medina. And Mark, good afternoon to you.
What's up, Funky Cole?
Fred, hey, Rob, long time no talk. But Fred, always enjoy the convo with you as well.
Yes.
Appreciate it, my friend.
I always call him Funky Cole, you know, Medina. So that's
yeah,
it.
Well, look, we knew Mark when Mark was just Ma Medina.
Ma.
Yeah, then he became
Fred
Mark Medina.
Fred put me on the map. Let's make that clear.
Is that right? Fred's done that for a lot of people.
Well, he did it for me.
He did it for me when I came to L.A. Nobody knew who I was.
But I knew you, Rob. And, Mark, I knew what you were going to be. So there you go. And, by the way, I check out your Instagram all the time. The pictures are great.
Love it. Love it. Glad I'm entertaining you guys.
You are indeed. Okay. So let's start with the Lakers. They've won 6 of 8. So all of the worry and the reasons to be concerned are now past, right? Because they've won 6 of 8. And they're really good. And now they've got a team that can win the NBA title.
Yeah, let's just schedule the championship parade for next June, right?
Yeah.
The problem solved. No, I mean, obviously better than the alternative, but I think it's a combination of, hey, Anthony Davis is finally stepping up his game. Russell Westbrook's exceeding expectations somewhat as a reserve. Also, the quality opponents, they're not good. Four of those 6 wins were against the Spurs 3 times. The Pistons, those teams are 30th and 29th in the league. So I think what's obviously going to be a very revealing point of how the Lakers truly are is this upcoming road trip. I mean, they got 12 of their 16 games in December on the road, and most of the teams are against 500 caliber opponents. So they got their hands full, including tomorrow's game in Milwaukee. So that'll really show whether the Lakers have solved their problems or not.
If they don't do well, is there a chance? I mean, Anthony Davis has played tremendous, 8 straight games of at least 20 points and 10 rebounds. At some point, if they tank on this stretch of playing good teams and on the road, do you look to make something happen? Is there a trade there? Do you keep Anthony Davis? What do you do to shake it up at that point?
Well, look, Rob, as you know, I've been shouting, and Fred, you know this well, I've been shouting since the offseason that the Lakers should have made a trade involving Russ, because even if you're getting quarters on the dollar, you're at least fulfilling positional needs, almost like that reverse trade that they did to begin with all the role players they gave Washington to get Russ. But to your question, Rob, do they make a deal? Pay attention to how the calendar kind of aligns here. December 15th is the first day that players that were free agents this past summer siding with teams can now be eligible to be traded. And that's part of the Lakers thinking of why they've been deliberate. It's their hope that once that date starts, that there's going to be more and more teams being willing to make moves. But I think there's also some presumption in that thinking, because the reality is the trade deadline's not until early February. So that leaves, you know, all NBA teams with basically 2 months of weighing possibilities. And the way the trade deadline works, it's almost like how we all were in college when we had to write the term paper. We do it the last night. So, you know, I think the Lakers are wanting to walk this tightrope of not giving up too many assets and being deliberative with the deal, because they're only shot. But if you wait until that trade deadline to find that perfect solution, who knows what the Lakers' record will be at that point. But I would pay attention to this road trip, how it correlates that December 15th day, because I think that there could be some relationship there.
Yeah, I just think they got to take a look, and you don't really know. Fred and I were saying earlier, Mark, to start the show, despite them winning, like, there's no real feel like, oh, they've turned the corner on anything, because of the teams you mentioned. There's a lot of bad teams in the NBA. There's too much talent for them not to win any games. They weren't going to be, what were they, 2-10 to start? It wasn't going to be on that pace. So I think you can be lulled into thinking that things have turned around. But in reality, it's just a soft patch in the schedule.
Yeah, and without a doubt, and to build off of that point that you made, Rob, they're only a few days removed from coughing up that 17-point lead against Indiana, which isn't really a good team. They've been supposed to be at the bottom of the standings. They've overachieved. A positive lens, you know, last week they played the Phoenix Suns. They were very competitive. I mean, obviously they missed LeBron James during that game, but Anthony Davis is playing at his best. The team's effort was at an all-time high, and they still lost. And now, while that does illustrate that, hey, the Suns are a legit team, they're a force in the Western Conference, it also, I think, illustrates the point that even if Anthony Davis is playing at his best, even if Russell Westbrook is buying into his role and the team is, you know, trying its hardest, that's probably not going to be still enough to win games against good teams. So the reality is the Lakers roster outside of their star players, it leaves a lot to be desired, and as a result, they're always going to be having to scratch and claw in every game, and even if they do that, it doesn't guarantee that they'll walk away with the result that they want.
All right, look at it like this. If you look at the Lakers now and you just want to put it into perspective, I give you two teams. Golden State has 11 losses. Lakers have 12. If you could pick one of the other team right now to be your team, which one would you pick?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I would pick the Warriors at the end of the day, because they have a lot more talent, and, you know, I think in fairness to them, they have also turned a corner relative to their early season struggles. That's not to say that, you know, they have all the questions answered. I mean, Klay Thompson and Jordan Poole haven't been their full selves, and there has been a lot of question marks of, can the Warriors pull this trick of winning with their star players while developing the young players? And while they might feel justified with the fact that they won a championship last season, the reality is once playoff time hit, they were playing their main guys. The young guys were sitting on the bench. And now, because of the roster changes, losing veterans and leaning more on the young guys, there had been a hope that they would be going through these pains so that they would be ready for the playoffs. That remains to be seen, but if I had to compare Warriors, Lakers, what's the more ideal scenario? I would still choose the Warriors, just because the Lakers seem to have an infinite amount of question marks while the Warriors have a handful.
And the Warriors, that Draymond punch might have done something for chemistry and on that team. They might not recover from this.
Yeah, I do wonder about that. Now, obviously, they're always going to downplay the severity of it. Like, how do you put an exact analytic of the impact of Draymond's punch? And even if that incident didn't happen, there would have still been some of those growing pains with the young guys, and maybe Klay Thompson getting used to a limited workload to open the season. But I'm with you that, you know, no matter what they say, there had to have been an impact on that locker room to open the season. And for that to happen in training camp and then all of a sudden having to start the regular season with the same kind of identity that they showed during the championship run is a lot to be asked. So when you add all these things up, I don't think it has anything to do with the Warriors getting team's best shots or nursing that championship hangover. I think a lot of it has to do with what you said, with the aftermath with Draymond's punch and Jordan Poole, as well as these growing pains that Klay and Poole are going through, and the young guys themselves.
Okay, let's talk Clippers now. They're 13-10. They're three back. I have to tell you, they've underperformed, in my opinion.
Really? With the injuries to Kawhi and Paul George, you think they've underperformed?
I disagree with that. Here's the thing. Here's the thing about the Clippers.
Ty Lue is unbelievable.
He's a great coach. Don't get me wrong. Am I right, Mark?
He's a good coach. He really is.
Hey, Ty Lue's a great coach, but I think the Clippers can still underachieve if they have a great coach on the sideline.
Yeah, my point is this. The expectations for this team. Every year they become stronger, and Kawhi back. Now, you know, he missed some time, and it's taken time for him to work back in. But there's a point in time where you have to go, no matter what, the expectation is there. In the preseason, most people think you can win the conference. You got to do it. And I think this is the year they got to do it, Mark.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%, Fred. Look, to what Rob was saying, Ty Lue has been a great coach. He's made the best of his circumstances. It reminds me of how he handled last season, but that's also a bad sign that the Clippers are going through the exact same things last season. Last season, they knew ahead of time, even if they formally didn't announce it, that Kawhi Leonard would be out for the entire season, if not most of it. And I think what has been really interesting, Fred, is even with that factor in mind, Ty Lue has said to me and others before games that in some respects this is a lot more challenging because he knew last season what he was getting into. He could have definitive rotations to account for the Kawhi wasn't going through that door. And here, it's been so much unpredictability of when Kawhi is going to be available, when Paul George is going to be available, having to sit John Wall in back-to-backs because of his own injury history, and then dealing with other injuries with their role players like Luke Kennard. So, you know, while to some degree injuries are obviously unavoidable in professional sports, there is a larger element with the Clippers that you can't help but wonder, could they control things enough that it's not as severe as it always seems to be every single season? And look, with Kawhi specifically, they knew they would have to be conservative with him. They knew that they would probably have limited minutes or seeing him out entirely in back-to-backs. But they did not anticipate that he would be missing such a significant stretch to open this season after only playing two games, and then for him to have more injuries up after his return. So I think it's disconcerting, to say the least.
Yeah, that is the part. I just can't understand between the Clippers and the Nets, like, to not have just your full team 1 year. You know, like, I think that's the most disappointing part of the NBA now, and I can't get over how many injuries there are, Mark, and then we see the nights when teams don't play their starting players. You know, like it makes an NBA fan go crazy because you're not seeing what we thought we would see.
Yeah, and I think when you compare those two teams, the Clippers and the Nets, when Kevin Durant was in town the other week in L.A., he mentioned how, you know, what the Clippers are going through really reminds himself of what the Nets are going through. But I think in fairness here, I have more empathy for what the Clippers are going through because some of these injuries just seem to be unavoidable, most notably with Kawhi. And on paper, they have done everything they can of putting together a really good, talented roster with good role players around Kawhi and Paul George. On the Nets, on the other hand, they've just been a volatile mess. They did not have, I think, the cohesion as far as, you know, what they had with Steve Nash as a coach. They've clearly put all their chips in Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and Ben Simmons without really a lot of good role players. I mean, they've been some serviceable guys like Nick Claxton, Patty Mills, but not much beyond that. And then, you know, they've just been dealing with Kyrie's nonsense, where a lot of his lack of availability is just his own immaturity of not being available last season because of the mandate, and then him doing things off the court with promoting that anti-Semitic film. Where the Clippers, a lot of it is all just injury related, and they're just having to try to navigate it through. But I think from a consumer standpoint, NBA fan standpoint, it no doubt is disappointing that you're seeing these two type of teams that have so much talent, but you never know when you're going to be actually able to see those star players play on a consistent basis.
Mark, last thing. Were you at the game last night when LeBron brought
up,
okay, about the Jerry Jones thing, Fred and I had a conversation earlier. We had some calls, just talked about it, and I want to get your take, but I think LeBron not letting the media respond was the bad part because he's asking the question, well, why didn't you guys ask me about Jerry Jones? Well, you played with Kawhi, a relationship with Kawhi. It's a player in the NBA compared to the NFL. What did you make of what LeBron had to say postgame?
Yeah, I think different mixed reactions. I think, you know, from a technicality standpoint, look, I can't speak for why, you know, the writers who are traveling to the games didn't ask him, but, you know, to equate Kyrie Irving to Jerry Jones as apples to oranges, there's a lot of interest in what LeBron had to say about Kyrie because he's a former teammate of
right.
his, and he's obviously in the NBA. You know, in fairness to all this, LeBron clearly has been asked a lot of times about social justice issues, Donald Sterling, Robert Sarver. But I do understand LeBron's point, the overall point that he's making, that from a society standpoint, unfortunately, there tends to be more, I think, negative energy toward, you know, whether it's a black athlete or a black coach that screws up as opposed to when it's a white counterpart. So I do get the larger point that he is trying to make. And as a white person myself, I'm certainly wanting to understand and have deeper appreciation and empathy for, you know, our troubled history and mixed history. But I do know that there are some, you know, technicalities that explain why LeBron wasn't asked about Jerry Jones. But I think the larger picture point he's trying to make, I think, is a valid one and totally understandable and respectful of it.
Well, he could have been asked about it at the shoot-around. He could have been asked about it the day before because the story was a week old.
The story's a week old, too. I mean, I guess, Mark, as a black guy in this industry for 37 years and, you know, always feeling like I'm going to ask the questions and, you know what I mean, hold everybody yeah. accountable. When I hear that sometimes, I just feel like, well, we did talk about it a week ago. Or I saw the black reporters in Dallas ask Jerry Jones the question. I don't think he got a pass. I think,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, that bothers me to think that he really believes, like, he's the first person who brought up the Jerry Jones story because we didn't talk about it. I find that to be mind-boggling.
Yeah, and I think the point that you made earlier about how not taking questions, I think that there could have been an avenue
yes.
of this leading into just a nice, really healthy give and take. And, you know, this would provide LeBron a platform to express even more insight. And
well, wait,
you know,
Mark, if he had insight, that's the point. If he had the
that's why he didn't take questions. Because
it's easy to mention it and go, well, what do you think of that?
Well, you throw a hand grenade and you run the other way, seriously. Whereas if you had a real conversation and, Mark, you let reporters push back and tell you why, I think he couldn't be able to get out of that box. Well, because you yeah. know Kyrie Irving, because you won a championship with Kyrie Irving, because he plays in the NBA, just like we asked you about Donald Sterling, who was an NBA owner, and Sarver, who's an NBA owner. Do you know what? And Daryl Morey, who was an NBA GM. Like that's why we asked you that stuff.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, we certainly would have brought up those points, and I can't help but wonder after that if it would have led to what you guys were talking about of having a really good first hour segment with a lot of callers chiming in. You know, the point I was making earlier was I know from experience with covering the NBA in the bubble during the pandemic where there was a lot of conversations about social justice issues and, you know, racial inequality issues in the U.S., a lot of players were inviting that give and take with reporters. So it felt like a conversation as opposed to a player giving a speech or, you know, reporters just asking questions but without, you know, answering player questions. And I felt if he had opened the avenue there, maybe it could have led to that kind of dialogue and it would have felt more constructive than anything else. But obviously, opportunity missed.
Mark, appreciate it. Good talking to you.
Likewise. Appreciate you, man. And don't let Rob twist it. You're the guy who did it all for me, but I also appreciate Rob's support as well.
Mark Funky Cole Medina, my man, no doubt.
All right, Mark,
yes,
be good.
Sir.
Happy holidays.
You guys do the same. Happy holidays.
Rob's a big tradition guy. He likes tradition. You like it. You like tradition.
That's right. Tradition.
Right. Well, to hell with it.
Why? You want tradition out the door?
I'll explain that.
Hey, it's your girl, Nina Chantel. You're listening to my homies, Fred Rogan and Rodney Peete on AM 570 LA Sports, your home of the Dodgers.
A me and Mr. is his clause.
Got it going on. Rob Parker here has got it going on.
Is that me and Mrs. Jones?
That's right.
It's me and Mrs. Claus.
Actually. Oh, me and Mrs. Claus. Yeah, oh, that's right. I like the older woman, too, with the white hair. Very nice. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? If you mess her hair up a little bit, you can't tell. You know, that's the good. Can't tell.
If her hair is real, she might knock her hair off. Too,
that's
huh?
right. You know? It feels like cotton, too, you know, when your hair.
I told you about, I think her name was Madeline Albright.
Yeah. What about her? Did you ever, you made out with her?
No, she was my fourth grade teacher.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe it was. Wasn't Madeline Albright in the, like Congress or something?
Yes. That Madeline really?
Maybe it was Margaret Albright.
Madeline Albright was the Secretary of State.
It wasn't her friend. What are you talking about?
It had to be Margaret.
Oh, all right.
Margaret Albright, she went out to the yard, and she was a really mean teacher, and all the kids didn't like her. And she went out to the yard to monitor recess, and a gust of wind came up, and it blew her hair off.
Did it really?
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys laugh?
Well, the kids did. I didn't. I felt badly for her.
Did you really?
And everybody started she started crying.
Did she cry?
Yeah, she cried.
Because her wig got blown off?
Yeah, blown off, and then she ran and caught her hair.
She was trying to chase after it?
Right, she did. She chased after it. And she grabbed it.
Did she catch it?
Well, it went for a while. And I mean, she was an older woman, and she didn't really have a great deal of speed.
Yeah. Did you like the Benny Hill theme start playing?
I know, right?
And anyway, so she put it back on, but it wasn't really good. I mean, it was like
right.
sideways.
Half-cocked.
Yeah. Leaves and stuff in there.
Yeah, so she went back to class, and, you know, the whole day she was miserable. She was so upset. And I went home, and I told my mother. I said, you know, Mrs. Albright's hair blew off, and all the kids made fun of her. So we made her cookies, and I took it to her house.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
With yeah. some glue for the cookies?
So I took her Elmer's and cookies.
So I told you I ran into my old math teacher on the Golden Girls cruise.
You did not tell us this.
I did, didn't I?
No.
You didn't, no.
No.
I think she was coming on to me, too.
All right, well, wait. Now tell the real story.
What?
No. Okay, this is your act. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you ruined it, Fred. You just ruined it.
Hey, Rob.
It's all good.
Did you run into your old math teacher on the Golden Girls cruise?
Yes, I did. It was amazing. I think she was coming on to me, Fred.
Really?
Because she said she wanted to teach me how to divide and multiply. Okay. Sorry.
Do you have any more performances planned?
No, but I want to get something done in January.
Do you?
Yes. I want to do it. I'm going to do it on the weekend. Close to your house so you can make it.
Good. I want you to come. Be there.
I know you do. I told you, Kev, Ronnie, and Rodney, when they came, it meant a lot to me. Those guys, I don't know if you even know. Like, it did, Fred. I knew you were working, so I'm not trying to rub it in on you. For real. But those guys, they were front and center. They were there laughing. It was that moment, being on that stage, you know what I mean, in Hollywood, in that room, right? And Kev, you know that. That's a big-time room there.
Like, it is.
Right? Yes. All the great comedians have performed there. It's only about, how many, 75 people?
Yeah, if that.
70 yeah. people, Fred. You know what I mean? You're in there. It was a sellout. It was a moment in my life.
That's great.
It was.
Well, I want to see the next one.
Yep.
Okay, so anyway, you're a big tradition guy.
What?
Big tradition guy.
There you go. I am a traditional guy. Yes.
You want to explain what this music is? Because I'll guarantee you, 90% of our listeners don't even know what
they don't know. This is from Fiddler on the Roof. This is tradition.
Where I am. To life.
That's right. Where I come from, tradition means something.
All right.
This is a great show, movie. Well, it was a Broadway show.
Yes, it was.
Did you go see it in Broadway?
And it also was a movie.
Yeah. I don't like the movie as much. I like the Broadway performance.
I saw neither.
You never saw Fiddler on the Roof.
I did not.
Do you know all the songs?
Or no.
You
don't?
What?
I do not know all the songs. Because I'm Jewish, I should know this?
Yes.
That's what you're
that
saying.
That would be like Kev not seeing The Wiz. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah,
you're right. I saw The Wiz before I saw The Wizard of Oz.
Yes. There's a lot of black people who've never seen The Wizard of Oz who know The Wiz.
Exactly.
Fred, did you know that? They know The Wiz more than they know The Wizard of Oz.
Well, nobody beats The Wiz.
That's right. Remember that store? That was a store in New York.
Did you watch The Wiz, Fred?
Pardon me?
Have you ever seen The Wiz?
Have you seen The Wiz?
No.
So you haven't seen it either. Wow. Ronnie, have you seen The Wiz?
I have.
Yes.
Diana Ross and Michael Jackson.
Diana Ross, Michael Jackson, Nipsey Russell, and I don't know who the Lion was, the guy from the Broadway show. He wasn't a big name. Mm-hmm. But they had, I mean, Michael Jackson and Diana Ross. Stephanie Mills was bummed because she did it on Broadway, and they picked Diana Ross to do the movie. And Shea Stadium was used as the backdrop. Did you know that?
I didn't, no.
When they go down those ramps,
that's Shea
Stadium.
Oh, no way. Nice.
No idea, because I never saw it.
It's a really good...
Rob, Fred hasn't seen Star Wars, so, I mean, use that as a gauge when you talk about Fred has, like, seen or heard.
Right? Never.
No wonder you have 15 kids. You've never seen any movies.
Take a look through your book and make me a perfect match.
Come on, Fred. You don't know this?
No.
Sing it, Fred.
I can't sing something I don't know. I can't sing, period. But I certainly can't sing this.
You bring the glue.
All right.
So Fred, I don't know any other Jewish person in my life who has never seen Fiddler on the Roof.
Okay.
I'm dead serious. You didn't feel compelled to see it?
No. It's like I don't feel compelled to go to Israel.
No, you've never been there? I've been to Israel. I've seen Fiddler on the Roof.
Are there more
I've had a little taken off, a little too much taken off, too, by the Moors.
Yeah, fine. Are there more Jewish people in Israel or New York?
New York.
Right.
So, I know.
So I've been to New York. Like, it's like going to Israel.
Okay.
It's fine. I see them there.
But I've been to Israel. It's fascinating.
And I hear it's beautiful.
I went to Jerusalem. I went to...
Tel Aviv?
Tel Aviv. I went to Masada. I also went to Bethlehem, where Christ was born. I'm dead serious. It was fantastic. It was fascinating.
And they say Tel Aviv is like Santa Monica, right?
You know? Is that what they say?
The beach and everything?
Yeah. It was fascinating. And then I got into the Dead Sea, floated around. I can't swim, so I was doing backstrokes, everything. I forgot my swimming trunk, so I just went in my underwear. I was like, there's no way I'm coming here. No way. I'm coming here, and I'm not getting into the Dead Sea. So I went in with my underwear on.
Well, that's easy for you because you just took it off and left it there.
I did.
Right.
That's the bad part, right.
You just travel, you know. Everybody knows how you travel. You wear three coats so you don't have to pay for a suitcase.
That's right. That saved me. That's $65 each way. That's a lot of money, Fred. That's a lot of chicken wings I could use and singles down the road.
You leave your clothes in the hotel room.
I'm a weird guy. I am. All right, can we get to the tradition?
Wait, you ever wonder why you never got remarried?
No, I'm a weird guy. Yes, I do know why I'm not remarried. I had enough.
You had enough.
Well, I thought, I told you this before. My wife is the only woman, and here I'm 58, soon to be 59 next month.
All right.
That I said I love you to and meant it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm one of those guys, I'm just like, I don't say I love you to everybody. Like, oh, I love you. Oh, who am I seeing this time? Or guys who get married four times. There's no way you're ever in love with somebody four times. Would you agree with that?
Well,
you've been married twice, but I'm talking about four times. Kev, you're married, newly married. Ronnie, four times? Can you really be in love four times?
Cannot.
There's no way.
I agree. You just want a roommate or somebody to split the rent.
An expensive roommate. If you get married again,
no,
and then it ends, it's, you know, you got to pay for that.
I had a friend of mine who was a sports writer in Detroit, the late great, I'm not going to say his name, but he was married four times. And he said the last one, they get married, you know, the honeymoon night. And he said he woke up the next morning, rolled over and said, oh, God, what did I do? And
he realized, in Vegas after a bender? Is that
he realized, like, he said it was the next morning he woke up. And he said it wound up lasting like 6 months. But he knew right then and there he had made a mistake.
Like, far be it from me, but like. At what point was, I don't know, Larry King got married, what, six times?
Seven, I think. Yeah.
At what point in time do you say maybe this marriage thing just ain't for me?
I agree. How do you, seven
six,
times,
seven
Fred?
Seven times, really?
All right. If you've been married, how many times? More than twice?
I think twice is like the max. I think like if it doesn't, the first one doesn't work out, you try
I'd
again.
I'd say three, maybe. I'd give it to three.
I say two, but that's me.
Yeah.
All right. If you've been married more than twice, you should call us.
Yes.
Sure.
866-987-2570. Seriously, Rob seems to believe that after two, it doesn't work.
And for me, the one was like I was the happiest man in the world when I got married. I'm not even gonna. It didn't work out, but I'm happy with who I'm at. You know what I mean? Where I'm at. And then I think I got too old, where I decided I wasn't gonna have kids. So after that, what? Because to me, being married is like starting a family. Okay. I think that's. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, I hear you.
I'm 58 years old. Why would I get married now?
Right. Right. You just have friends.
Just have friends.
Okay. If you've been married.
And usually they whisper nice things in my ear when they get their approval on my MasterCard.
Yeah, we know.
The problem is you have to actually scream into their ear because they're deaf. They got to turn their hearing aids all the way up. So.
Nice, Kev.
Okay, you can work that in. You can work it into your next show.
Kevin Finger's going to open up for Rob Parker.
Very nice.
Women be shopping. No, I won't do that.
All right, so anyway, if you know anybody married more than twice, call.
Yes. I would love to hear why you're married. Why would you get married three times?
Well, somebody's going to call and say, you know, if we get somebody that's married three times, going to say, because I absolutely love my wife.
Okay.
Right? And you're saying this.
I could just see the second time. I do, Fred. And you have experience. You were married. Okay, the first one didn't work out, but you fell in love again. I could see that. Well, you know what I mean? And then you've been married this time how many years? 20 some odd years?
Almost 30.
Almost 30 years. A long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I could see that. Three, four marriages. I don't know. I just don't think you could be in love that many times. I mean, really in love. You could really care for somebody, want to take care of them. They treat you nice. You know what I mean, Fred? Where you have a nice relationship, where you have a lot of things in common. But I'm talking about love. Where you know what I mean. When you're in love with somebody, you know. Like they always say, you'll know when. Am I right on that?
Yes.
You just know. Like, oh, no, I want to be with her. Like all the time.
Right. Right. All right. So if anybody has, somebody is calling. All right. We'll see if Kevin picks him up. Kevin, pick him up. Pick him up and see. Maybe this guy's been married three times, four times. All right. So we've got a call. We'll take that on the other side. And then we have to get into this tradition thing, which we kind of got off base on. But we're going to circle back and get on it. It involves the tradition of New Year's Day or a New Year's Day game. Let's put it like that.
Bro, yo, it's Cruz, J. Cruz, Cruz Show, Real 92.3, Fred Rogan, Rodney P. Let's get back to it. Here we go.
Oh, what a beautiful way to express ourselves, knowing that Christmas.
Rob Parker's in today for Rodney. All right. Third marriage. Now, Rob believes after two, you can't be in love again.
I think it's very difficult. Very, very difficult.
Jay's in Lake Forest, and he is married for the third time. Now, Jay, how can you explain this to Rob?
Hey, Fred. Hey, Rob.
How are you?
Hey, Rob, you and I are homies, man. I'm from Queens. I'm from Bayside.
Oh, all right. I'm from Jamaica. That's what's up. Nice.
Yeah. Hey. So this is, I'm on my third marriage, my wife's second, and we're both religious-minded folks. Mm-hmm. And it's working. It's working.
Okay, so it is possible. I've only been married once, and it was painful, you know, to be divorced or get divorced. But I just, the love I had for her was something I never had felt before. And so I'm not so sure you can get that feeling. Did you have that feeling in your second and third marriage where you couldn't live without them? Like, help me. Did you have the same feeling, or was it a different feeling the second time or the third time?
No, that's a great question. I have a 36-year-old daughter from my first wife. My first wife actually moved to Israel.
Mm.
Yeah, she lives in Israel now. My second marriage was really kind of a dud. That didn't go anywhere fast.
Okay.
But the third time, I met an evangelical Christian lady. And we dated for 5 years, and then 7/7/07, we eloped to Vegas. We went to the Venetian. We got married on the wedding gondola. Very
wow.
Romantic. Very romantic. And then over the course of the next 7 years, she became interested in Judaism, and she ultimately converted.
Nice.
What a story. What a story.
Nice. So now everything's kosher in your
That's
life.
That's right. Very nice, Fred. Yeah, you should do that workshop.
Thank you.
There you go, Fred. And Fred, hey, Fred, I have Fiddler on the Roof DVD, and I certainly would be willing to send it to you.
Absolutely. How can Fred never have heard Fiddler on the Roof? Are you kidding me? Fred.
Hey, well, I am to life.
Can you find, where's Anna Tefka?
No, we don't have to do it.
Yes, I need Anna Tefka.
We don't
hey, you know Anna Tefka, don't you?
I sure do.
I belong in Anna Tefka. I know it, Fred. I need the song. All right.
Very good, Rob. Very good, Rob. Yes. We're homies.
There we go. Take
right,
it easy.
Jay. Take care. Thanks. Right. Appreciate you calling.
I'm sorry, Fred.
What?
This, you got another one?
No, go ahead.
Oh. No, I was just saying the, I can't believe, the Fiddler on the Roof thing throws me a little bit. You're just not interested or you're just
Don't
not, in, are you into musicals or you not? Did you ever watch The Wizard of Oz? Did you watch The Ten Commandments?
No.
Ben-Hur?
Yes.
Okay, so some. You just hit and miss. Casablanca?
Yes.
Okay, so you do watch some of the Maltese Falcon?
No, haven't seen it.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I wasn't big into movies back then, in the day, when I was growing up.
But do you think
Because I was out working in the field every day.
Is that right?
Yeah, I was plowing the field.
Plowing the field in Detroit?
Yeah, backyard.
Okay. The Green Acres in Detroit.
Yeah, right?
One time, so we had this pear tree, okay, in the backyard.
All right. Fred grew up near my barbershop on 7 Mile.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, right.
Well, I grew up next to Barry Gordy.
Right.
So we had this pear tree. And I decided that for whatever reason, the branches were too long. They were just too long.
You just decided on your own.
Yeah, I'm like 9 years old. And I'm thinking, you know what? The tree doesn't look right to me. It just doesn't. And I've got to fix it. And I know my parents are going to be pleased if I do it. So I got a ladder, went out there with a saw, and started cutting down the branches of the tree.
I know that didn't go over well.
It did not go over well.
Did they use one of the branches to whoop your ass?
They should have. They're like, you're cutting down the fruit. What are you doing?
Of course, that was fine back in the day. It's different times now, but
right.
Still.
Well, back in the day, you get the belt.
Yeah.
Or you get the switch.
Yeah.
And they would make you get your own switch.
They make you go pick it out from the tree.
And you pick out one of the flimsy switches, and they were like, oh, you're going to get it now. Trying to be cute.
You're right.
I'm going to go get a switch.
I'm right. Don't let me have to go out there and get one. You better pick a good size switch.
They end up just cutting down the entire tree and whooping your ass with that. So
they beat you with the tree.
No.
Hey, Ronnie, what do you have over there?
No, you don't have anything.
Anna Tefka. Anna Tefka. Overworked Anna Tefka. Where be so sweet. Here we go. Come on, Fred, join it. You don't know this.
I don't know it.
Anna Tefka. Anna Tefka.
Intimate, obstinate.
I feel like we should be having good filter fish.
One I meet.
Okay. All right.
Here we go. Wait a minute.
Oh, no, we got more? Oh, God.
Soon I'll be a stranger in a strange new place. Searching for an old familiar face. Oh, Anna Tefka.
I cannot believe this is happening.
I belong.
Why are you waiting? Hanukkah's like 2 weeks away.
That's right, Fred. Hanukkah's coming.
Hanukkah's 2 weeks away, so we should have Rob do Fiddler on the Roof.
Absolutely.
L'chaim to life.
Thank you.
Okay, all right.
Oh, my God.
I just opened your horizons. You look at me differently now. You're like, this guy is unbelievable.
I do look at you differently. I now know I never want to hear you sing again. There's no question.
Ronnie, you were impressed, Ronnie, weren't you? Like, I know the song.
Was that the B-side to Dubai?
Yeah, that's
all right, we have to do this, Rob.
All right.
Tradition. And it's got us started on Fiddler on the Roof. The Rose Bowl's always played at the same time. And it is a national event. But now to get the college football playoff, and they're expanding to 12 teams, the Rose Bowl had to be flexible and say, we will not play in the same time period we always play in. And there was some conversation about this back and forth. Well, it's all been ironed out. The Rose Bowl is going to be part.
They caved.
Of the, well.
They caved.
Did they cave?
Yeah, they caved.
Doesn't matter.
Yes. Some traditions matter, Fred. I do. I'm going to be the negative Nelly. Like, why do we have to change everything to make a buck? Like there are people in Pasadena and the parade, and it's a part of their lives, and they want to take their kids and their grandkids, and instead, because they want to squeeze out more money from the TV networks to put more bad college football teams to play in a, what's been a crappy college football championship, right? Most of the games have been blowouts, and that's with four teams. Now you're going to add 12 teams. It's going to be worse, and guess what gets trampled? Our tradition of the Rose Bowl and the Rose Parade. For God's sakes, everything shouldn't have a price tag on it. Why do we do this? We love the Dodgers because they refuse to take money to change the name of their stadium. We love the Yankees because they won't take a dime from American Express to call that place the American Express that Babe Ruth used to charge or whatever. We can't have any traditions. Let's tear down the Colosseum in Rome. It's in the way. Let's build a new place. Certain things should be held sacred. And they sold their souls for more dinero, more shekels, more money. And I'm sick over it.
Okay, well, I disagree. I disagree. 100%. You're certainly entitled to that. Look, you're either in or out. You're either in or out now, Rob. Rob, we don't pick up the phone and, you know, there's a click and you tell Gladys, can you get Kevin Figgers down the street on the line, please? No, we have cell phones.
Hold, please.
Right, hold, right. We have cell phones. The world changes. And for the Rose Bowl, it was pretty damn simple from where I sit. You agree to this or you're out. Done.
I get it.
So you know what? Agree to it.
Why do we have to sell out everything, Fred? I just made the point. You want the Colosseum knocked down in Rome? Do you want it knocked down?
I'm not going to knock it down.
Why not? Fred, they could build a better mall right there in that spot.
No, you'd have to build a new Colosseum.
Let's move the pyramids. It's just taking up space in Giza.
Rob, the Rose Bowl in Pasadena is a venue that houses events. The Colosseum in Rome... They don't have the gladiators going there anymore.
No, but you could make more money if you had something there rather than just having tourists go by there.
Yeah, but the difference is with the Rose Bowl, you need events in the Rose Bowl for the Rose Bowl to make money. And when things change, you want to be a part of it. You don't want to be
Why can't college football
behind?
Say, yes, one of those games will be at the Rose Bowl and it will be on January 1st after the Rose Parade?
At 2 o'clock Pacific.
Yes. Whatever time that it usually is. I grew up as a kid in New York watching the parade of roses, right?
Mm-hmm. Tournament of roses.
Tournament of roses. There you go.
Yeah, and then the game. But the thing is this: to be a part of this playoff, you need to acquiesce. You need to be flexible. You need to pivot. You need to be nimble. They made the right decision. If they don't make that decision and they're not included, they're going to lose a major event.
And what would the Rose Bowl mean? Either, like, especially if you have 12 teams, a couple of those from the Pac-12 are probably in there, the Big Ten may be in there, or if the Pac-12's even left. So what are you left with? Like, San Diego State taking on Tulsa or something?
Right.
Who wants to see that?
Nobody. Nobody wants to see that. They definitely made the right decision. And then you say, well, I think it's ridiculous that they would expand to 12 teams. The playoff. Are you kidding me?
It is ridiculous. No, it's just a money grab.
It's very
Kev, have the games been competitive?
It's very
I'm talking
necessary.
About the, four,
In
when
the
we,
final four. Usually, no.
No. It's yeah, been but, They've been games. The teams have lost by double digits most games. Most of, last year, Michigan got Wally Mop. They didn't even look like they belonged in there, and they were the number four team a year ago. And we've had nothing but blowouts, and now you're going to open up the field to 12 and have people turn off the games?
All right. First of all, more teams are better because everybody likes a tournament. Everybody likes March Madness. It's exciting. One and done.
And one has beaten 16 has beaten one time in the last 80 years.
So what? You don't know what could happen.
Yes, we do. We do know.
No,
except for one time.
Well, there's only 12 in the football playoffs, so I think 12
They're
is
not
a
12
share.
Great football teams on this country. That's the problem.
But here's the thing. Every year, even this year, when we look at this and we see how it plays out, you know, USC, if they beat Utah, they're in. But if they lose to Utah, but this happens and that happens, should they still be in? I think the system is imprecise. Selecting these teams. More teams, more opportunity, more interest, more games, but nonetheless.
Yeah, but the more games and more teams you add, the more you diffuse and lessen the college football season. If I'm Michigan, Ohio State, and I know we're both making it in, I don't need to play my best player. The game that you lose, the game doesn't matter as much, Fred. You know that.
But you don't know you're making it in.
Yes, you do. When it's 12 teams and you're both 11-0, I wouldn't play that game.
What would incentivize you is if you get a home game or something like that, which makes a big difference if you're a team like Michigan and you're playing in the big house or you have to go on the road somewhere else.
So now, that's different. You. Right. But if you're just like, we're in the tournament and we don't know where we're playing regardless, are you going to blow your best players in that game when it doesn't really matter?
No.
And
that's all. That was my argument for the longest time too, saying it cheapens the regular season, but it also affords opportunities for the teams down below. So instead of arguing 1-4, now we're arguing 13, 12, 13, 14. So there's still an argument. The Oregon State game.
There's always going to be an argument, right? No matter what the number
more
is.
More of an impact for Oregon State too, who will be in that race right now if we had 12. They'd be in the discussion.
Look at the NBA season now, where you got to play in and all this. Now people don't. It's not even the same. Would you admit that?
Yeah,
it's like
but there's too many games there, Rob.
No, but it's like but they made the games not matter because you could have an under 500 record and still have two spots with a chance to make the playoffs.
Right.
What would be the point of playing a regular season?
Well, if the regular season was 12 games long to get into the playoffs, it would matter. You'd play it. That's what football is.
Football, but they've added more teams as well. They keep adding. They want to. Eventually, every team will be in the playoffs.
It seems like it.
Well, gives everybody a chance.
I would have been fine with 6 or 8.
Fred, it's just about money. It's a money grab.
Of course
grab.
It is.
Yeah, people are already talking about 16. They haven't even started 12 yet. And so we're like, all right, the countdown begins till we have 16. The NFL didn't even have that many. The NFL has what, 14?
Let's go to this.
7-7?
All right, let's just go to 12 as the example. And you point out Oregon State. Go Beavs.
Yeah.
If the Beavs somehow found themselves in the national playoff with 12 teams, now they might get destroyed. But what does that do to Corvallis? What does that do to their fan base? What does that do to their alumni? What does that do for their school?
Their program financially.
An awful lot. It makes a difference. It's a good thing.
I get the money thing and why people, sell their souls for this stuff. I get the money thing, but I just don't think everything should be for sale. That's all. I'm a different cat. I don't.
Well, I got to be honest with you. As a matter of fact, I'm going to take exception to that remark.
Why?
Well, I'll tell you when we come back.
Okay.